This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
All right, stop what you're doing, because I'm about to ruin the image and the style that you're used to. All around the world, it's the same song. R.I.P. to the great Shock G, a.k.a. also Humpty Hump of Digital Underground, who passed away this week. Young Jeff, a big Digital Underground fan. Let's get the names out of the way. I am Jeff Hawkins at Crap Game 13 on the old Twitter. Chris Novembrino at D.W.A.T.G. on the Twitter at Shake Them Ropes. Also on video, should Jeff screw up the audio, at YouTube on the Voices of Wrestling channel. Look, people, we need to talk a little bit. There's a social compact between you, the listener, and me, the host of this show. Chris, not so much involved. Chris,
I choose to abdicate from my part of the social contract. And
yes, and this is as the
middle class. No, as the middle class, it's my prerogative.
Well, this social contract is that Jeff, I'm not an audio guru. I know enough to be dangerous. I will screw up the audio once a week, once a year, once a week, once a year.
Weekly basis.
Once a year, I'm going to upload audio where I've kept a track in that's overlaying because I'm trying to edit things together. Because you see, Chris strong-armed me for money to stay with the show or to keep producing the show. He goes, I'm not doing this show if I have to produce it. So you're going to have to do it. It's like, all right, fine. I'll use my limited, but somewhat decent knowledge of audio tracks. So here's what happened, Chris, because this involves you and your audio. That's my Seth Rollins. Oh, my Seth Rollins impression came out. Ain't that great? You're not looking like Seth Rollins all clean.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I was just not taking that bait. Not taking that bait.
Look, man, one day you just show up and Becky Lynch mistakes you for him and you're happy. All right, here's what happened. I have the show synced, locked, loaded, pared down to one track, ready to upload this thing, and I'm just doing one click gloss over, and there's a space right at the end of the show. I'm like, what is going on there? So I give it a listen. And it's right as Chris is making his final point about Raw and also doing his plugs. And I'm like thinking, I could leave this blank space in there. Get a few complaints that, hey, the last 2 minutes of Chris's audio cut out. Upload this show and be happy. But no, not Jeff. Chris is already logged off for the night, off talking to cats, imbibing other things. So I take it upon myself to clip Chris's audio, because I don't want the criticism of, oh, Jeff, that authoritarian in his heart. He didn't want people to hear about Don't Worry About the Government.
People know that they can go to don'tworry.tv or get on patreon.com/DWATG or check out the YouTube channel or on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify. The people know that Don't Worry About the Government is available on lots of different mediums. And that's what's so great about the people. We have a smart audience and a very handsome, attractive audience.
So anyways, Jeff uses the Zoom audio to plug it in there, and he leaves the Zoom audio track on this new version. So it makes it sound like there are two tracks of Chris talking at the same time to Jeff with different audio, different points in the show. So I screwed up, all right? It happens. Okay? I'm sorry. And this is what Chris and I talk about off air sometimes. It's like, this is the only time I get show interaction. I could say some of the worst things on earth, and I've thought about doing that just to see if people are listening. But boy, I screw up that audio. Everybody is at my throat. And I appreciate the audience because it means people are listening. But at the same time, I'm like, where are you with this awesome hot take I had, or awesome, you know, this observation that should blow everybody's mind, or taking me to task about some opinion I had, something? Nuts. Audio screwed up.
Do you want me to send you the package I made last year about the joys of editing?
No.
So that you can... Okay, fine. It was a good package. I threw this on. I was like, the best part about editing is seeing the smiles on the children's faces. I like quoted myself at the beginning of this package. Like, and then Yakety Sax comes in. You don't remember this?
I think I do.
I found a way to work in Yakety Sax. I was pretty proud of myself.
I'm waiting because most people are good-natured about, hey, Jeff, the audio's messed up. Hey, by the way, and you start getting, as it hits the feeds of various services, because it takes some time for the new copy to make its way, but 3 hours later, hey, Jeff, don't know if you know this, your audio's screwed up. Yes, I'm an idiot, all right? Stop it. But at the same time,
I actually joined in the party, and I let you know that the audio was screwed up, too. So, like, it was fun. I like feeling like part of the audience sometimes, too, and this was a fun experience for me this week.
Well, the funny part of this is that the funny part of this isn't the good-natured people. It's the people who are, like, genuinely angry at the audio screen. Like, what am I paying for? I'm like, it's a free podcast. I don't know.
What are you paying for? Do you want to pay?
What are you going to do to please me?
No, we can help you with that, please. Yeah.
I am displeased with your audio malfunction. What are you going to do to sate my anger right now? I'm like, it's a free dopey podcast by a guy who's way too old to be doing wrestling podcasting. And a guy who's kind of in it for the laughs. Let's face it, Chris likes this show, but it's not a passion of his to talk wrestling necessarily at times.
I would say that it is a fair characterization of my passion for wrestling, that like it's like an important part of my life.
Like, he's looking for the love, though, sometimes.
Me? No, I can't say that I am at my all-time peak interest level with wrestling. Like, I would say it's probably fair to say that I was more into it 5 years ago than now, but I still like doing the show, and I like doing the podcast, and, like, I remain hopeful. But it's not like there's an untalented market of wrestlers. I remain hopeful that good stuff will happen.
I like the boys. I like wrestling. I like wrestling a lot. Sometimes, as we will get into, talk about some of the companies.
Yeah.
Occasionally it becomes a thing. And with that, once again, I will plug our sponsors because I did not do that top of the show. But once again, we are sponsored by Manscaped and MyBookie. More on them throughout the course of this show. Starting with... we did not do a rundown before we hit on air, so let's see if Chris wants to talk about Trash Bag Gate.
Okay.
Mark Carano, Senior Director of Talent Relations for a number of years, also as seen on Total Bellas / Total Divas, let go by WWE on April 22nd, this from the Wrestling Observer, after a public embarrassment when Mickey James Aldis noted that after being fired last week, her belongings at the company were sent back to her in a garbage bag by Carano. She wasn't the only woman who got her belongings sent in a garbage bag this past week. Multiple female performers have confirmed the same thing happened with them this week, and it has happened in the past, some claiming dating back more than a decade. One woman noted that she was actually sent the belongings of another woman in the garbage bag that arrived at her place of residence. This was noted by Paul Levesque, Stephanie McMahon, and John Laurinaitis. As soon as the story broke, the person who did this, who wasn't named, was fired immediately. Quote, one of the performers, we have drawers that travel as well as bring in stuff from home, so we leave little things we may need from week to week. Our gear, makeup, shoes, etc. We take our gear bag home, but a lot of people have heavy gear that is easy to leave at the venue. Another talent noted to us, talent who is let go if anything of theirs is left behind at arenas, it's boxed up and sent to their homes, etc., etc. But Mickey James's problem was apparently she felt it symbolized that the trash bag that was, that symbolized all she was worth, which is not the case. But yes, it could have been handled better. Also let go were Nicole Zioli from the Talent Relations Department, while John Cohn, best known as a referee, was temporarily relieved of his job in Talent Relations, but will remain as a referee. He got his job in Talent Relations back. That's something to talk about a little bit. We're here fired, knee-jerk fired, and then, oh, no, no, maybe we were a bit too rash. But we were also told that decisions regarding the two were not related to the garbage bag incident, as only Carano was let go for that reason. Which brings us to the other firings on this day. Mead Rust, who served as VP of Communications, and Joe Villa, who was Manager of Publicity and Corporate Communications, as well as Brian Flynn, Chief Marketing and Communications Officer, were let go. That, to me, screams PR disaster. This got out. Sack everybody who was involved in messaging.
I'm going to go a different direction.
Okay.
This is political, and that this is being used as auspices to do a cleaning of house. And that if they didn't want to clean house with these people, they would turn a blind eye on it. I'm looking at certain people on the roster who maybe shouldn't be there, Velveteen Dream. That there's a history of this company finding a way to get over stuff, and there's also a history of this company finding a way to use stuff that they should be legitimately upset about as a way of doing less noble things.
There is a talking point going around that perhaps this was more convenience than job performance because Nick Khan wants to bring his people in for communications, but it's a little weird that the communications people were let go on a day where communications failed. Okay,
let's walk it back too a little bit. You have this trash bag thing. Like, do we really believe that there was a meeting of like multiple people all standing around Mickey James's stuff and they're all looking at it and they're like, what are we going to do with it, boys? And one person speaks up and they're like, I've got an idea, sir. We're going to throw in a trash bag. No, let's have a vote on this first. Everyone's like, yes, throw her stuff in the trash bag. I mean,
that makes it worse, Chris, because they were firing over perceived optics of a situation.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what leads me to believe that this is political. I believe it is political because if you want to fire someone because you thought, hey, what you were doing here was kind of like somewhere between sexist and just bad business, then you would fire that one person. You might even name and shame them on the way out. In this case, they use this as like, oh, this is part of a systemic failure. And it's like not a systemic failure. This is a gross decision.
I forgot to put in part of the story, which may have led to the communications department being fired, and this wasn't in the story at the time, but Chris, on this day, yesterday, the corporate account started tweeting out their new ad campaign featuring Drew McIntyre and Sasha Banks for hefty trash bags.
Let's wind this back again. Like they got a new deal with hefty trash bags. How could they possibly have known that the Mickey James trash bag story was going to break at the same? So like, if you're really gonna lay this at the door, is WWE a tacky company? Guys, look, tacky is understating it. WWE is kind of a gross company at times. While all this looks bad, though, if you actually think about timeline, it's hard to think that this is a grand way of like, well, we're going to really dunk on Mickey James. The knock on the whole Mickey James relationship in this last run is they didn't have any regard for her whatsoever. Like, there wasn't much thought about it at all. I don't think it's spite. I think it's just apathy. Ignorance, not seeing the talent they had, which is true of their entire relationship with Mickey James throughout her entire career.
Yes, and she should have been the exception to the rule. She should have been allowed to come back, say goodbye to women that she's mentored, to women who looked up to her, to women who grew up wanting to be her. Yeah, we've said this on the show before. She is the third wheel of the classic women. Trish Lita, Trish Lita, Trish Lita, Trish Lita. No one mentions Mickey James. They mistreated her on her first run. The whole Piggy James story. Yeah. Things like that. I was not fazed by this at first, although I'm not going to defend WWE, and I'm not going to scold anybody who was angry at this. Because I've worked in big law. I've worked in Hollywood. I was cut from a major college football program. This is part and parcel. At big law, they don't care about you. They want you out of the building. Bring your keys and wallet. We'll mail your stuff back to you. Somebody from your department takes a file box, usually from whatever service you're using for shredding. It's like Iron Mountain was ours. They throw all your crap in there. They take it to the mailroom and they put it in a bigger box. There's no bubble wrapping, fragile things and stuff like that. Trash bags tend to be fairly accessible. Although this is a company that does move to move through trucks every week into stadiums. So perhaps they could have used a little bit more care, but I viewed this as, no, trash bags are accessible. Send the intern down to clean out the thing and we'll send the stuff back to them.
I mean, the thing I'm thinking about too is just, so you want to take items like clothing and, you know, boots, shoes and other stuff, make sure they're all intact, water protected, they're going to get sent in a package. What's the easiest way to do that? And like, you bring out the trash bag. I've seen people do that with moves. I would do that, you know, if I needed to real quickly just make something kind of sort of water resistant, I'd take the stuff, wrap it in a trash bag, because yeah, you can get a bunch of them. And if it's like a hefty bag or something like that, that's solid, you know, that's solid resistance. It'll hold up. Those hefty bags are great. I've been hearing about them on WWE TV.
Yeah, in sports, it was either a laundry bag or a clear bag, so they made sure you weren't taking your playbook or anything out of the office there. My locker was raided by other players who stole my shoes and, you know, because
it would be better, I suppose, if WWE maybe had, like, you know, their own little, like, proprietary WWE stamped bags or whatever to send off the final goods. A little more thought. I think this story is emblematic of, like, the kind of tactless way WWE separates relationships. And, like, that is the...
This is reputation driven.
Yeah, it's the deeper truth about this story. It's not, oh, we think Mickey James is trash. It's that when we stop working with wrestlers, we generally don't treat them with a whole lot of respect. And we send them their stuff back in like a bag. And we don't even let them come in and get their stuff or say goodbye or anything like that.
We fired people in our most profitable year by claiming budget cuts. And we sent them their stuff back in a trash bag.
Yeah. And then the optics of it. And that's something your PR. That's something your PR department can fix either. Which is, again, you know, I want to be clear. I was not putting up a defense of them at all. I was sort of positing that this is a company that's taking this bad thing and doing another bad thing with it by cleaning house in their org chart.
Also, because eyes were on WWE, perhaps tying into this Q1. Call was on Thursday as well. Let me explain something to people, because these calls are the same every year or every quarter. They don't say a whole lot. Things are going to be great. The thing that drives me nuts, and Chris, we talk about this all the time. Our metrics of what makes a good wrestling program and what makes success for a company are not their metrics for it. So these, for lack of a better term, I'm going to say dopes. These dopes who get on the conference call when it's time for Vince McMahon to speak and go, hey guys, are you concerned with, you know, how are you guys addressing the bad creative in this company? They don't view it as bad creative, but and they came back with this. What do you expect? That the numbers I gave away the answer. I was going to say, what do you expect the answer to that's going to be? And it's going to be, well, if you look at our YouTube numbers, there's a lot of fan engagement right now. And, you know, we don't see any issue with the creative. We don't understand this problem. You know, we're, you know, this sector is doing well, this, that, and the other. Social engagement. Peacock is very pleased with the ratings they're getting.
And they'd probably argue there's a cause and effect relationship between creative and profitability. And if we're profitable, then is our creative really all that bad?
Yes.
This is obviously a logical fallacy from anyone with a literary background.
Yes.
But in a business sense or in a business argument, it is fairly compelling to the investor class.
Yeah, this is getting on a McDonald's call for earnings and go, why don't you use better beef?
Yes, you guys, fundamentally, your Egg McMuffin sandwich has bad component parts, like the egg or the The English muffin is not a good English muffin. The egg thing is weird, and like the bacon is not the best bacon. What are you guys doing about this?
Why aren't you using American bacon instead of Canadian bacon on these things?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I just...
It's not what they think.
It's just... I'm done listening to these live. I didn't listen to this one live, but I heard that. I'm reading the transcript as our friend Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful is doing this, and it's like... They ask about the creative that's bad, and... Of course, Nick Khan, total pro, total all-in on it. But look at our YouTube numbers. Fans don't see him unhappy.
I want him to re-raise. I want him to go further. Love the Fiend.
We've never been better.
Yeah. This Fiend angle is awesome. Did you guys not see Randy Orton and the Fiend at WrestleMania? Alexa Bliss is doing some of the best work of her entire career right now. Khan, straight ahead. I like Khan! The worst stuff... Yeah, the worst stuff is the best stuff. That's what I want from Khan.
And then you should also yell Khan like Kirk from Star Trek 2 every time.
Khan!
Every time you call on him. There's your outdated reference for the week, kids. Yeah, I just... It's like... Yeah, the McDonald's analogy to me works. I'm a little stalling here because I'm looking at my next note and I don't know if I want to go into it, so I'm gonna put it on you, Chris. Just state it.
Okay.
And if we don't want to talk about it, we don't have to.
Okay.
Charlotte Flair.
I'm into it. Let's talk about Charlotte Flair.
You go first because I don't want to clunk all over this.
Okay. So for those of you who are not aware on the Charlotte Flair situation, I'm going to try to give a recap here and have Jeff catch me with the net underneath the tightrope as I make my way across it.
God help us all.
So Charlotte Flair was out for a certain time, and there was
She's about to be out for a certain time, thus the reason they did the story about being suspended on Raw.
This has led to speculation about what is the prompt and is the stated reason the true reason she is going to be out and what is happening. And a certain 7-star, maybe 8-star reporter got out over his skis a little bit and got the ire of Ashley Flair in his reporting.
Yes, what he did was he added the context of, well, you know how they are, and if you know the stories of Kevin Dunn and Vince not finding people cosmetically pleasing, he added that into the reporting of what she was going to be out for, which, to me, it's, you know, unless she... The thing here for me...
The thing here for me is twofold. You're going to have your thing. I got a different thing.
All right,
I think that this is irresponsible reporting. I think it's one thing to report that Ashley Flair is going to be missing time from WWE. It is, however, we were talking before the show about something else involving fact checks. And this is like a non-sequitorial fact inclusion that is serving as a form of editorialization. So is it true that Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn have a history of demanding cosmetic changes out of women performers on WWE television? I mean, just 2 weeks ago, I was moaning about how Mandy Rose has like unnaturally long hair now after cutting her hair short after last year and everything. Like, no, of course he does this, and like, this is not lost on me. But when it gets included in the reporting in this way, it is done in a way to lead the reader to believe that they're arriving at their own independent analysis, but they're not. They are being duped and led down a very clear path to the quote-unquote correct analysis here, which, according to the author of that article, would be that Ashley Flair is missing time because you know how Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon are with the surgeries.
If she is correct, and the way she took it down was, Dave, you have my number, call me. You got to contact her. You got to ask, hey, can I say this stuff?
Oh, if you didn't do that, it's an absolute failure of reportorial responsibility. It's just basic due diligence. There's a story out here right now. I'm calling you about this story. If the reporter calls the subject of the story and the subject gives a no comment, then at minimum you would report the no comment. But I think Ashley Flair is correct that there was no attempt by the reporter in question here to reach out to her about the story they were putting out, which is a dereliction of reportorial duty.
Because there's twofold things. If it's from somebody in the company, we're towing HIPAA violations here. Just a little bit. With releasing health information of an employee of a company. If it's Dad, who we know said reporter talks to, Dad might not be clear to say this stuff either, and it's probably not his place.
And now, reporter is stepping in between a familial relationship between dad and daughter. And oh, by the way, reporter in question is asking dad what's up with daughter without then going and asking daughter, which is messed up and inappropriate for said reporter to do.
There are people in the company that like this dumb show and, you know, find Chris and I funny. Finds Chris more funny than... No, I just... But we talk to people in the company because people listen to these podcasts and stuff like that. And I am always... I am scared to death of releasing anything I can't release on this show because they have people looking for leaks. They have people... I don't want to jeopardize anybody's job. I don't really want to break news, to be honest with you. I kind of just want my opinions to be on the right track. My cynicism about this company. I don't want to work for them necessarily, but you know, if they pay me, I would, but I'm a little too old for them. Don't get me wrong. I you know, I just don't want to jeopardize anybody else as well. But so I will say, what can I put on record? Can I have this on record? Can I allude to it? Can I say this on air even and make sure, because I just don't want that kind of, I don't want that kind of blowback and I don't want to hurt anybody else. And this to me was, I won't say there was malice to it because we all know what, you know, that there's strange cosmetic pressures on women to, and there are asides.
I don't think we have to think about
people.
the emotion, yeah, or like the motive underpinning it as much as I think you can just look at the facts of the way this story was reported or not reported and go like, this is not an appropriate or correct way to be reporting news in any industry.
I agree.
And
if you have access to somebody, ask them. That's pretty much my
and Ashley Flair and the Flair family has made it very clear that this reporter does have access to them. And I think it was not all right.
We may go into the angle in a little bit because I find it interesting as to what they might do, especially in relation to how Daniel Bryan did tonight. But before that, let's give a shout out to our first sponsor, Manscaped. Support for Shake Them Ropes is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer for our listeners, 20% off, plus free shipping with the code ROPES at manscaped.com. Chris, I have taken advantage of this deal today, as a matter of fact, during SmackDown. I went there because I broke my nose hair trimmer.
And
as a balding man, or as a bald man, I am convinced the hair just recedes into your body. It just decides to grow out in other places.
I call it the redistribution of the follicles. Yes.
So I got the hair. I got the ear hair. I got a trim. I got the nose hair. I can get out of control. Now that we're on camera, I got to be a little bit more conscious of that. So I went there and used the thing to get a new, they call it the weed whacker. But they're mostly about below the waist trimming, and you don't want to use the same trimmer you use on your face as the balls. That's just nasty. I have the lawnmower here that I am. Oh, you have yours too.
I have mine too.
For those on video. We have it. Oh, are you playing the guitar with it? I don't think this is how the product was intended.
It picks up on your electromagnetic pickups too, people. You can do this. You can be the next Tom Morello. You.
I do really like in this 3.0. I can't say enough about this thing. The charger that they provide with the 3.0, because it used to be just this USB cord that you had with an outlet thing, but now you got a little base here.
Oh, that's
to
nice.
Log it in.
That's nice.
Yeah,
that's
nice. I really like that a lot. Of course, we have the Krupp Reviver Ball Toner. Although it doesn't come up because my background
is just getting gobbled up by the background. But people,
but anyways,
this is a valued razor. A valued razor.
This is still an audio show. Krupp Preserver Ball Deodorant, because, dude, if you've been sweating or anything like that, and you're sitting down, sometimes you take it with it. Ugh. What's that? And it's you. It's you, you pig. You don't want to smell your duck butter. Get that stuff clean. So yeah, Manscaped hooked us up with a bunch of tools, and we do really like them here. They are high quality stuff. You will not get nicked or cut or any of those other things that you used to have problems with. The light really helps you.
Laser
see what you're doing.
Sniper.
Laser sniper.
Laser
damn
sniper
right.
It. In the dark, you can be on target no matter what.
And plus, they will throw in two free gifts into their perfect package, a pair of high-performance Manscaped boxer briefs. They'll keep your junk feeling fresh all day, and a travel shed bag. And I like this. I don't think it'll show up because, again, black background. Oh, but I could get in there if I go
no,
close.
No, the
it's
bag
nice.
Is good. Mine's over. No, it's like the bag is good. Even the t-shirt they threw in it's a good t-shirt. All Manscaped's products are really great.
So I am legitimately
glad that they're sponsoring our show.
Yes. Trim that junk of yours. Get 20% off with free shipping with code ROPES at manscaped.com. 20% off again with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code ROPES. Unlock your confidence. And as always, use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. One last piece of news as we go into wrestling talk here. The ratings are out and Jeff just closed his window. There you go. The ratings, NXT improved 841,000 viewers, 0.23 in the demo, up 4.5%. I think we were up 26% total in the demo. Or actually up 28.5% in the demo. AEW 1.104 million viewers, still second on their night, down 9%, 0.37 total, down 15% in the demo, but that's mostly due to the challenge season finale they were going up against. There is a chance next week that AEW is the number one show on cable on Wednesday night.
I think it's doable for them. I think they could settle in at over 1 million, which, okay, so now kind of forensic
analysis. We said that's the Mendoza line. We said that's the line of
they
demarcation.
They need to be there. Yeah.
The Rubicon being crossed, this makes them a player if they can maintain above 1 million a week.
Yeah, no.
And grow on it.
Right. And Vince's initial strategy of sucking away some of the viewership appears to have actually been somewhat effective, just with 2 weeks of that removed now, and with the smattering of that being removed when it was happening in 2020. Now, with all that cleared out of the way, there's room for them to run. It'll be interesting to see if they can keep it up, and I think, you know, get eyes on the product, that's good. Are you going to do the right things to keep eyes on the product? And we can get into AEW as they're kind of reordering themselves and see if they're doing that.
I thought it was a savvy move to make the main event Darby Allin and Jungle Boy.
Okay.
You're too young and up-and-comers. Pretty good match. Wouldn't say it was great, but it was pretty damn good. I was entertained as hell by it.
Yeah.
And, yes, go for the youth market, because nobody else is. WWE puts their young, I mean, we talk about, you know, we can be crass about it and say thirsty women demo for the young hot up and comer. We were talking about that with Humberto Carrillo and Angel Garza when they were on the come a bit, but you know, all the guys, they like to, WWE likes to wait and see if their guys can be stars as opposed to, you know, putting the rocket to them too early and then them falling on their face and all those other things.
Yeah, no, I think that the main event, if the idea was we want to showcase the two young guys, the main event was a good opportunity to do that. I would have liked, I think Jungle Boy needs to win stuff at a certain point in his life. I think Jungle Boy continues to be the bridesmaid, not the bride here, and that's a bit of a problem.
Is that an effective story in modern day television?
Not the way they're telling it.
Yeah.
The Jurassic Express as the two tag-along buddies to Jungle Boy's hero's journey is not doing it for me. Mark Luchasaurus and Marco don't amplify Jungle Boy. They're just his tag team partners. They don't build his character out.
And the visual, I mean, I thought it was I understand why they did. They wanted to get Sting and Luchasaurus out of there, but the visual of that was cartoon character versus men to me. I think Jungle Boy, and this feels like, because it feels like Jim Ross has been forcing it this entire time. It's time to go to Jack Perry.
Yeah.
You can make it a nickname, but the whole look looks kind of Chikara-y, I would say. It's a little too
Jungle
childish.
Jungle Boy is just like not.
Needs to be Jungle Man. Needs to become Jungle Man.
It's like not an. He could be Jungle Jack Perry, right? Like just Jungle. Like that, that's his nickname. His nickname is Jungle. And you know, Jack Jungle Perry. You could have him have signature moves named after jungle stuff. You can have an homage to it, but Jungle Boy is not a world champion name. Jungle Boy is at best a mid-card champion name.
Yeah. I will give a comparison, and this will make me a hypocrite in some ways. And I get that. I will be made a hypocrite, but, you know, it's not the first time. The same criticisms people had about Bayley in her face incarnation on the main roster apply to Jack Perry. There's a limited window where this thing's going to work until it's like, all right, needs to stop being a boy, needs to grow up a little, needs to appeal to adults, I guess. I don't know. Am I wrong on that?
I don't know.
There's
that
probably
he
more
needs
juice to this than the Bayley thing.
He doesn't need to appeal to adults. It's just like if you're gonna be the kids act, you're saying
yes.
North American ceiling. Title and lower, please. Please put that
TNT
ceiling
title
over me. Yeah, TNT title and lower, please. Whatever. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Tag title runs.
We're going to be the tag team. I want the Lucha House Party to be like a Dollar General version of the New Day. It's the New Day with dinosaurs.
Yeah, well, we start on AEW. Let's go through some
of
the things that we were thinking. I know what I'm going to end with, so I got two other notes in here. Chris Jericho, perhaps for people who turned off Shake Them Ropes last week because they were mad at the overlapping audio and did not refresh the feed or get to hear it.
Or just went and checked out the video feed, which you can find on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube page.
Oh, that was slick. Chris had a very great comment, Terry, and it got doubled down again this week concerning Chris Jericho. People are enjoying these promos a lot more than I am because your point last week was this, and I will sum it up for you and you can expound on it a bit, is it's a style of comedy where the heels don't get a good comeback off of it. You know, they don't get, I mean, I assume they're going to win this match, I assume that's going to, unless they get a beatdown during the parlay. And oh my God, I can't believe they did that. And then the babyface get that. But Jericho's style here is not, I just want to see these guys be fiery and want to fight. I don't want to see the jokes. I thought Santana did a pretty darn good job here in terms of his seriousness. I think Sammy's doing okay. Hager tried with the, you know, he had the straw thing in there. You know, the prop comedy was there, but Jericho's the weak link in these promos for me in terms of this is a blood and guts match.
Dude,
and
you are not
taking this seriously.
Is trying to make fetch happen. It is so cringe to watch him force the issue on the pineapple. And
It's a dad joke.
And like that's kind of an example of what I was getting at last week, where it's like a thing that, like, how does MJF or the Pinnacle react off of this? Like it's dumb. It's not funny. This is also like a new faction, and I'm with you. I actually, my knock on all of the factions in AEW right now is different from, I've seen other commentary on the factions and I basically don't agree, but my complaint with them is it's very predictable, or at least I wouldn't say predictable. There's a very natural way each one of these feuds should go. In each one of these faction wars. And in the case of the Inner Circle Pinnacle one, the natural order of things should be that Pinnacle ultimately triumphs. But I'm starting to think that Inner Circle wins the gang part of this, and then MJF wins the singles match part of this. I will say that for his part, MJF's promo was very good this week, although I couldn't help but notice that he brought up the Jericho rub thing, which might have been a talking point on this show at various points.
I could not help but notice that one Sean Spears was not there. I have the feeling he's going to take the loss, but then it's going to be more of a beatdown on the Inner Circle, but they're eventually, he's going to get Zabisco'd out of the crew. I don't know. Do I go into my Pinnacle point here because this is a good thing? Yeah, I guess so. I think Pinnacle has another problem. And that Pinnacle is not the most elite stable in AEW. That's the Elite. And you can't have...
They're literally called the Pinnacle. Pinnacle sits at the top. Their tagline is, when you're in the Pinnacle, you're on top. And so, like, what is Pinnacle going to do? They should be feuding with the Elite. They should be feuding with... Yeah, like, they really should be. Like, it's what they... Those guys have everything that what MJF and the Revival and all of them want. They have all the gold.
Yes. It's like, why are we dealing with this Inner Circle thing? Because it's not quite personal enough. It is for MJF, and that would make this a little bit cooler. But you have two factions calling itself the best, and one clearly is getting second billing here, and it's hard to rectify that in some ways to me. I'm not saying, well, Jeff, you know, you can't have two top factions. It would be great to have two top factions. They're not building this Pinnacle as a top faction just yet to me.
No, and I think long term, the presence of the Elite as a faction continues to pose a problem for Pinnacle, because decommissioning the Elite as a faction at this point is at minimum a quarter year away. They are going to, I mean, Omega's got the pay-per-view up here. We seem to be setting the table for the Moxley Kingston stuff. Adam Page might be getting back into the picture here against the Elite. Like, it seems like the Elite have a good 3 to 4 months worth of programs left. Meanwhile, MJF's group, which claims to
be the... Stop playing with your cats and do the show, Chris.
I have brought three into the show this week. I'm going for the cat trifecta, all four, on the video feed, which you can find on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube page. Go and check it out, people. But I think that we are at least 6 months away from MJF finally being able to insert himself into the title picture when, I guess, presumably Adam Page wins the title. I don't know who beats Omega. And then that's the other problem. It's not a quick line to getting the belt onto MJF either, because you got to go from Omega, transitional champion. Do you really want to do transitional babyface champion? And then MJF. You could say, oh, we're going to put him in the chase. But transitional babyface in the chase after losing the belt, that is not a great slot. Historically, that doesn't play out well for the performer who gets tasked with that role. That's my problem with Pinnacle, as I think they're, you know, a fundamentally fine faction, but like, I guess MJF needs to win the North American title from Darby Allin relatively quickly here.
TV title, TNT title,
TNT North, whatever. They're all mid-card title. I'm just gonna call them mid-card
title. Mid-card
title.
Call them, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alex Abrahantes as part of Death Triangle.
Penta says, I'm another corner on this triangle.
This is the dude who leaves the office job to join a motorcycle gang. I the lameness of the dancing, I don't know if I'm endeared by it or if I'm annoyed by it. help me out, Chris. Am I being too harsh on this?
For a
team with Penta.
Okay.
Who is sports entertainment Penta,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. Yeah. Spentagon Jr. I like Ibrahantes. I find, if I'm speaking my truth, I find him entertaining. I hate what we're doing with Pentagon, so I have to calibrate against the fact that I absolutely loathe this Pentagon character. And so, in the context of this crap house Pentagon character, I like Ibrahante's inclusion. In a more serious presentation of Pentagon, I would not want Ibrahantes anywhere near him. But honestly, I wouldn't necessarily want Phoenix anywhere near him either. I would want Penta as a solo act. And like, I don't think Phoenix adds to Penta's act. I like Phoenix. I think he's a good wrestler and everything. I just, he's not a complimentary heel to Penta in the right way. And I think Penta is just like this. Watch those old Lucha Underground episodes from seasons 1 and 2. He just is this force of nature on those shows.
And now a litmus test to see if the angles that they run on AEW are effective. Chris Novembrino. What is the name of the gentleman who had a balsa wood chair broken over his head?
His name is Camerato.
Okay. It's effective. Took you a second or two. That should be instant. That's a main event angle type. This is a spot with a long and storied tradition in the Rhodes family. Of course, first used by Dusty, I believe. I believe Ray Traylor as Big Bubba Rogers was the first to get this one.
Yeah.
He may have used it in Florida before that, but I don't remember that. He used it prior to the War Games on Ming to help make him look like more of a threat when it was Bodyguard Ming as part of the stud stable, as you might recall. Ming, by the way, not in that War Games match, which is very weird. I mean, am I wrong? Did they do this spot with Wardlow before Cody and Wardlow? Because I swear they did it in AEW. And I'm not sure if I'm misremembering or not.
You know, the problem with this spot is that we have desensitized chair shots.
Yes.
And so chair shots don't have the oomph that they do that they should. And in order for this spot to be cool, right, it's got to be a wood chair. Because you need to do it, and then, like, the chair explodes, but the person stands still. Like, that's the visual.
But it makes no sense in the context of metal chairs. That's the whole thing.
Right, in a world where we had unprotected chair shots in all of the late 90s, and yes, we got away from that, but like people still, I mean, wrestling video games, you grab the chair, and you hit someone with the metal chair, and you keep hitting them with the metal chair over and over again. I mean, what we would want is something that we obviously can't do, where Camerato gets hit in the head with a steel chair and just like, kabong, like dents, and like Camerato is still standing there. that's not safe. I don't want him to actually do that. But, like, visually, what we as the audience are conditioned to want is essentially something of that level of gravity. And so I feel like the exploding wooden chair spot is out of time because we don't have wooden chairs as a regular feature of wrestling.
You know, I think you're right. And I think also just moving on from that spot and doing the rest of the show desensitizes it too. If this had ended the show and you really wanted to make Camarado a thing, like a main event type of thing. And the problem is he's up against the Nightmare family, which this is a mid-card feud.
Yep.
And this is not the time to pull out that spot just yet. There are other things you can do. Now, when you want to elevate this QT factory thing as a crew to be reckoned with, then you pull this out. But doing this mid-show and going, well, moving on, as opposed to, oh my God, did you see that? And then just fading to black. I think that would have been the stronger choice.
Yeah, no, or I mean, Marshall needs to cut a promo about a go-go and Camarado at this point.
I did appreciate a Go-Go's as a Brit. I can't stand being here in America. There is some animus.
Really? You like that?
Oh, dude, dude, if you talk to British sports fans and, like, British people on the F4W board, too, there's a lot of national pride in there as to, you Yanks, you're uncultured, you're this, you're that. I know it's a trope, but it's real, too. There's a lot of, and I'll troll them, like, I don't talk to people in third world countries. We're not third world. when I want to be edgelord, yeah. And I'm kidding. That's real.
Found it to be very uncompelling. I think it's weird that the guys a Go-Go is staying next to, all effectively from America, he's like, America sucks. And like, they have no reaction to it. And QT's just like, I'm going to get you your money. It's like almost like not, I mean, there's people who aren't particularly political, but like this was beggared belief when it came to the level of apoliticality to have someone just be like, America is a crap country that doesn't do anything right, blah, 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 blah. I hope you get paid, good sir. Come on. I don't know.
I appreciated it. I will disagree here. I like that he made, number one, he made it about money, which is a good thing. I'm here for wrestlers making things about money.
Wouldn't mind that part.
But I also don't want a deep introspection about the issues of the Labor Party.
This is the other thing, is I just don't like, I don't want to beg the question of, well, what's so bad about it?
You don't want it. You don't want jingoism in your wrestling?
No, I think it ends up being, it's not that I don't want jingoism in my wrestling. I'm not like, oh, wow, I never want to see a Nikolai Volkoff match ever again. Get that crap off my TV, cancel
Volkoff. I never want to see a Nikolai Volkoff match again. Well,
no, those things sunk. Yeah, like, that's why you don't want to watch any of those. What I am also saying is, in these times, it is really hard to tease out further some of these storylines. It sounds like on initial foray, okay, British guy who hates America, easy, home run, classic wrestling trope. But when you gotta do the week to week of like, what is this British guy not like about America?
Fatty foods and your good dental care and your the tropes of the British heel.
Yeah,
it's
tricky to update that into 2020 with the way politics are these days. So I don't think it's as
your 5% tariffs on steel and.
Yeah, this is something that really gets people. Exactly. I don't know.
Your two-thirds needed to propose a constitutional amendment? Screw that, people. We need is.
I can't believe you guys don't have a House of Lords.
That's what I want. Go cuts a promo. Darby.
Where are your knights? Where are your knights? I've been looking all over.
That's the dumb way to do it. The smart way to do it is like, where's your bicameral legislature with, where's your shadow parliament in the front row of your House of Lords meeting? Yeah, I, I don't have anything else for AEW. Do you have any notes? I mean, the Christian match was okay.
The Christian match was okay. Is a fair way, but he looked a little gassed at the end of it. Outwork everybody. Maybe work on the cardio. Shida and Tay Conti, I thought was pretty good. Pretty good.
Go.
Yeah, there are a few points where Shida and Conti kind of weren't perfectly in rhythm with one another, but like, Tay Conti, WWE will definitely look back and go like, man, we really missed out on her. We did not get her. We were sitting on her and didn't figure it out with her. I think she's really good. I enjoyed Dark Order politely applauding Shida as she came out. I like what Dark Order has become in a weird way. I think that having a feel good babyface faction is good that you can actually get behind. And yeah, I liked this match. Shida is not a great narrative delivery device. However, the in the ring stuff with Shida always vastly outperforms her acting.
Yes. Yeah, and plus she's translating things in her head to, you know, second language and then out. Tay Conti was fantastic in this match. I'm gonna one up you. Was she perfect? No. Was she Sasha Banks? No. She was damn good here. And she was made, I think she was made in this match. I don't know. It's, if I'm Tony Khan and I'm in the back watching this, I go, after Britt, the person I want with this belt is probably Tay Conti. Unless somebody else comes along. I would be looking at that. Yeah. Because I do think Britt Baker's taking the belt off of Shida.
Yeah,
time.
Yeah, no, it's time. It's time. No, she does. In a way, Shida has been a perfect babyface champion.
She's great.
Because she's sort of flavorless. And I'm not trying to say that super pejoratively. She is sort of flavorless, and like, I think it makes the transition to Britt the heavy character. A real good contrast, and Britt's great. And also, yeah, I think that there's real intrigue between Tay Conti and Britt Baker as a match. I think they'll have a good match eventually. I think Conti will have a good match against Thunder Rosa on her way, too.
The good thing about Shida is that she is like a screen for which Britt Baker can project upon to make her even more of a heel. Shida's just a good person who works hard, you know, defends her title against all comers, will defend against friends. And Britt's the big baddie who's going to take it away, and then she will get heat for that.
And she's a bad friend, too. Like, she just sees everyone as an equal. Like, even people who are on the AEW rankings beneath her, Shida, like, looks at Tay Conti as her friend and her equal and, like, someone she respects. Britt Baker doesn't even know Reba's name.
Yes, it's Rebel. Is it Reba?
Doesn't matter.
Back to Tay Conti. I believe this was her longest match of her career. And I think she didn't gas. She did perfectly fine. Yeah, she probably forgot a spot here and there, but yep. I will forgive it. I thought, man, you know, if Statlander has half the stuff that she had before she left, Rio coming back in, there's some free agents on the market you could add in here and season it. This women's division is coming back a little bit strong. We still have, you know, we still have Big Swole in here. It's not bad. We have some youngins in Red Velvet and Kylan or whatever her name, the taller woman that's with her in that stable. Cause we now have female stables in the women's division. You know, we have, we have Jade Cargill, and God knows how we're, okay, I'm going to ask this. Would you, I guess we have to have Cargill get seasoning, right? We can't just put the title on her and have her take it off of Shida.
I think you got to give it to Britt because I like Jade too, but you got to give her seasoning. And the thought of giving Jade lots of long matches with all these different people up and down the roster, I think is too much too soon.
Got to keep building her. Got to keep getting longer and longer and longer matches. Yeah. Bring in some. Jeez, bring in a Mickey James. Bring back in a Serena Deeb. to have her guide through her first couple of long matches, see what she has.
Yeah.
No, I would agree there. Anything else for Mew on AEW?
Billy Gunn looks pretty ridiculous for a guy who is in his mid-50s. Like, he's...
The visual of him going in there and fighting while his kids cheer him on is a little ridiculous, too, as we haven't gotten a lot from the other members of the Gunn Club.
Yeah.
Other than Elevation and yeah, I get that.
I mean, he
it's
looks...
not a compelling story for me.
No, it's not a compelling story for me. I don't really care about Colton and Austin. And yeah, no, it's not good that Billy's the most interesting member of the Gunn family still. At 57, we should feel good. We should look at Billy like Bullet Bob Armstrong. But, like, we like Brad, and we like some of these other young up-and-coming Armstrongs, and we're not necessarily thinking, oh, man, Bullet Bob's going to have another match.
If Bob Armstrong were doing better living through chemistry like Billy Gunn, I'm not saying that as a pejorative. I'm saying that as, well, he got caught doing like this.
No, he totally did a weightlifting competition and then got disqualified for doing performance enhancing drugs.
So don't get on me about this because
that's documented. That's 100% documented.
Because trust me, it's not like I'd be more. I've thought about it at this age too, doing some little HGH stuff, you know, to get some testosterone therapy going to, you know, have my youth for once, because that was taken from me horribly. What I'm saying is, yeah, if Bob Armstrong looked like that, he would have been monster over, probably just doing the wiggle the butt stuff. But there's something to be said about being the 57-year-old that legend that people want to root for.
Yeah.
You know, that one last run thing, that guy who's going to sacrifice himself, you know, for the good of the company or something, like Armstrong would when he was commissioner. He'd come back one time, probably get beat, come back in a mask and trick people, and eventually be commissioner again. I like that. And I understand what Billy was doing here. And I thought he did a good job. I don't see the value in building up QT Marshall, to be honest with you, especially if his guys are going to cheat for him.
This is the other knock on factions. There are too many in this sense. Like, where is the factory in the spectrum of heel factions right now? They're at best the third.
They are second from the bottom with that Dr. Luther Serpentacore one being at the bottom.
No, they're above Dr. Luther. But they are definitely below Pinnacle, who are in the middle. The ironically named Pinnacle, and they're below the Elite, and I feel
they're
like
below
oh
Death
no,
Triangle, they're
and they're below,
below
Taz's faction, Death Triangle's baby faces.
They're below Matt Hardy's faction too.
They're like fifth. They're fifth, and like this Cody feud, there are too many stories going on right now in AEW, and I do think that is a fair criticism.
As opposed to feuds, as opposed to like real hate-driven things.
Yeah,
doing narratives.
Yes, like the Nightmare Family story is a big old story, but it's not.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a lot of heat to it at this point, or momentum.
And how do you get heat for that other than
how you get heat? I'll answer that question. You get heat from that by booking an episode of Dynamite that is centered around the Nightmare Family. And the Nightmare Family gets focused on. They're the main event. They're interviews. They're storytelling. And the problem with AEW is that they might do that on one episode. Maybe they listen in again and magic words find their way on my TV screen yet again and something like that happens. But what happens the next week is also as important. The next week has to keep moving through. If it's the Pinnacle, it's the Pinnacle. If it's the Nightmare Family, it's the Nightmare Family. But we need to keep kind of building up. And so often, like the Hardy family. The Hardy family, Matt Hardy contract thing, Butcher-Blade relationship. We sort of got a little bit of that in the post-match Mazzarinos that happened this week. But, like, we haven't actually really expanded on the Hardy family stuff. And it might be upwards of a month like from the last time that we saw it before we see the next beat in that story. And that's too long. And that is a very AEW thing. There is a beat, a really long pause, and then you see the next beat in that story. And unless you're the Elite, and then you're getting coverage on a regular basis every week.
Yeah, from a storytelling perspective, they fault either one of two ways. It's either they don't tell the story enough and they leave it for weeks and weeks and weeks on end and then they come back to it, or they're trying to tell every story every week. Like a Game of Thrones episode where we have to check in on every single kingdom every single time, when you don't have to do that. You can focus on, all right, here's what's happening in House Lannister for 45 minutes and we'll have, you know, a 15 minute aside with the dragons or whatever. But you know what I'm saying there.
Yeah. No. AEW's episodes, I think, are better when they're more like kind of some of those old episodes of TNA Impact. When they, you know, used to go, I mean, like, there used to be too much stuff on some of those episodes of TNA Impact, but those at least made for a more compelling watch than the story this week, especially if you don't care. Let's say you're not a huge fan of the Elite storyline with Kenny Omega. You know, sometimes you feel like you're stuck in that for too long.
Agreed. Give a shout out right now to our second sponsor, mybookie.ag. Let's wing this copy because the copy's too old. But hey, kids, we are getting into money time because we are about to get into playoff season with the NHL and the NBA. Hey, the NBA or the NFL draft is this weekend, I believe, or is it next weekend? Jeff can't remember, but it's around this time and it's coming. So that's right around the corner. Hey, you know what? No matter the sport, no matter the minute, MyBookie puts the action in your hands. Sign up today at MyBookie.ag. Use the promo code ROPES to secure a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Make sure you use our promo code so they know we hooked you up. Promo code ROPES. Look, they got... Oh, you can bet on the Oscars. That's this weekend. They got betting for that. They got betting on non-sports things. If you're not into sports, you just want to bet pop culture. They got who's going to die first type of prop bets. Hey, if you're grim, you can do those types of things. Baseball is underway. All the in-game betting, all the in-game parlays, all the in-game, inning by inning, you can bet on certain things that happen. You can bet on players, how they will perform. You can bet on teams and how they will perform over the season, over the night, whatever. Whatever you want to do. Look, trust me, I've used my bookie. I used it during the NCAA tournament. Broke even, but I did use my promo code ROPES. Once again, mybookie.ag, use code ROPES because, let's face it, sports is far more interesting when you put money on them. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. And again, we thank them for sponsoring us throughout the year. Just want to know what they have to say, but hey, come on back. We love them. Mybookie.ag. Okay, palate cleanser. Chris did not watch NXT UK. I did. I enjoyed it. It's a fun hour to be had.
What was my boy Joseph Connors up to this week? I want the Connors report. It's time.
Up yours. Up yours, you jerk. Whoa, yes, he was on this show.
Whoa.
He was seconding the lovely Ginny in her match this week, which he won. Called out.
So you're telling me Ginny was accompanying Joseph Connors?
I do not, because look, that's gonna be Slapjack's job soon.
All right. I will X out of the Zoom call again so fast.
Dress him up something, you know, with something thing. Take off the hockey mask, and you got bootleg Joseph Connor.
Ginny should be so lucky as to be paired with Slapjack. She could be Slap Ginny. She could be Slap Gin.
I'm not going to go through the entire show, but there was one thing that just tickled me pink. It did, and that's a weird phrase to use because I'd never use it, but it made me very happy as an old school railing against certain things in wrestling that I don't like things. So, Gallus, main Gallus guy, Joe Coffey is fighting Eddie Dennis. And he gets the pin on Eddie Dennis. And then Primate and T-Bone come out for a post-match shenanigans. Chris, this was what I want in post-match shenanigans. There were no wrestling moves. There's no, you know, power bombs or flips or dives. This was stomping a guy, punching, Tyson Tebow punching guys. I want the violence to resonate a little bit more. And I think it doesn't resonate when you're doing moves on
you
guys
hit
in a post-match
beatdown. Now you hit your finisher.
Yes.
Now you hit your finish. No, I cannot. You're absolutely right. You've identified, or you put your finger on a thing that drives me crazy, and I don't even realize it drives me crazy. But like now that you say it out loud, no, I hate it. It is so annoying in an impromptu assault to have like... even Irish whips and stuff, like especially when it's like I need to Irish whip you so I can hit my power pop-up power bomb. It's too much. Just go down and beat the crap out of the guy. And maybe at the very end when they are limp, pick them up and then hit your finisher on them as just like the period at the end of the sentence. But it should not be like the thing that breaks them down.
Again, another solid main event as well. Mustache Mountain defeating Shaw Samuel and Noam Dar. That was a fun little match, too. I really enjoyed that. Next week, we're getting Gallus versus the new Hunt, Eddie Dennis team. Where's my boy Hitchman? Where's the wild boar? Is he getting dental surgery, too, because he needs teeth?
You know how Vince and Kevin Dunn, have been very critical about certain performers on the roster, Jeff. I'm not making a statement one way or another. I'm not telling you any reporting I may or may not have. I'm just saying Vince and Kevin Dunn have a history of being critical about the cosmetic appearances of people.
And if there's somebody they should be concerned about, it's Mark Hitchman. Because
I'll tell you what, Mike Hitchman. Has been objectified by the fans. So some of the comments from some of you people, you guys say that he doesn't want to just be reduced down to his body, people.
I love that dude.
I know, I'm actually a huge fan of him. I came with love. I love Wild Boar. I think he's
smaller,
great.
Smaller, scrappy, has that weird... The contacts work for him. He has
no
teeth.
No, contacts are dope. Yeah, and actually the no teeth work for him too. So like he's great.
He looks like an animal. Put him, hardcore fed, I would love that guy. So let's save NXT because we need some positivity in the world, and let's just do whatever's coming up on the. On the main roster, I'll pick up my notes.
Wait! We got to talk about Cool Kyle.
No, that's NXT. We can stop. We can do that with NXT. I want to NXT.
I thought you said save NXT. Okay, all right.
I want to talk about Cool Kyle too. Okay, but I want to end on a positive note because the end of NXT was and some of the matches in there were fairly positive. I thought
that's true. No, I really did enjoy that show. Cool Kyle was an outlier from what was otherwise a good show. We're going main roster time now. Yeah.
Raw. I have three notes here. First of all, something great, something absolutely spectacular that they should do more of. This Bad Bunny promo with Damian Priest in their native language talking to actual media. That's how you make stars, guys.
He was so good. He was so good at this promo. And you guys want to be World Wrestling Entertainment, let people speak in languages other than English and then put good, prestigious-looking captions underneath them. It will make them sound smarter. One, because they're speaking in their native tongue, which they're more comfortable with doing. Two, because you can actually, if you need to punch up what they said, you can punch it up a little bit in the captions. But also, people with good-looking words underneath them always come off as smarter. On like news where they have the crawler underneath it, and it makes it feel like more of a newscast. Same idea. It's just like a weird psychosomatic gravitas enhancer. And I thought Bad Bunny's English promo from a few weeks prior to WrestleMania wasn't bad. This was way better than that. And it got across even more that this guy absolutely 100% loved being a part of this whole process. And I thought he was great. I want more of it. Yeah, I agree.
Vince McMahon got into the office late. By office, I mean the arena. Yes, on Monday afternoon, started tearing up the script, as some of you may have noticed. because plugged for this show originally was Randy Orton versus Braun Strowman. That did not happen. In fact, it felt like they were going to be doing the same show from last week because it started out with Drew McIntyre and then Cedric and Shelton versus the War Raiders. Adnan Verk week two. not showing himself in glory by calling it again the Viking Express when it's the Viking Experience. He's trying.
They have a horrible name. The Viking Raiders are horribly named.
Yes. The War Raiders would have been better. I agree. Yep. My other note, is this Riddle Orton match. Now, don't get me wrong. For stupid comedy, the promo that led to this match, I got a kick out because I've watched that Orton Stone Cold, the Stone Cold sessions or whatever he calls it on the network. And Orton came off really cool on that. Orton came off as a guy, hey, look, I used to complain and my dad put me in my place and said, look, you are blessed to have been picked up so early and gotten this thing. And Undertaker gave you, you know, offense early. And he realizes this now as an older veteran. He goes, I want to kind of give back and then get yelled at by Vince for giving a young guy too much in a match now. And he came off as the coolest MF-er on the planet on this show to me. The promo, I just died at Orton going, this guy annoys me to the point I want to punch him in the face. And I'm here for that. My problem here was the match. And I'll tell you why. It's the type of finish as a jaundiced, longtime WWE viewer where you know Riddle's going to take three losses to an RKO because of it. And I don't know where Riddle got all that much out. He got a nice long match. I loved this match with Orton and Riddle. It was hard hitting. It was vicious. You saw kind of that thing that you really want where that light turns on in Riddle where he gets really pissed at some point. That happened and that was nice.
Yep.
And
I
don't mean to steal your thunder if you were going to bring that up.
No, but that, definitely.
But the roll up out of the RKO as opposed to winning with his finisher, that just screams to any knowledgeable fan. He's going to get offense in, but he's not winning this. Or they're going to form a tag team, which I don't know is going to happen. But RK-Bro would be funny.
He did already float out RK-Bro. That's already been put out into the ether. I have a problem with this in that Matt Riddle's character really is annoying. And everyone saying Matt Riddle's character annoying is speaking a truth. He's not fun. And you kind of
it's that hard kind of funny. It's that. How do I put that? That sitcom character that annoys you, that was at first popular. It got the big crowd laughing. Something. Now they're gonna put him in every episode. I don't want to say Poochie because it's not quite Poochie.
You were gonna say no. It's not quite Poochie.
I was gonna say Urkel.
Like,
I was gonna say Steve.
Yeah,
Urkel.
No, he's a bit of a Kramer. Steve Urkel. Yeah, it's. We need Kramer in every single episode, sort of like we need lots of Kramer. What's Kramer doing in this scene?
Harpo does something funny in the script of the Marx Brothers type thing, yeah.
Early iterations of Bart Simpson where it was like Cowabunga, don't have a cowman, and he didn't like actually have a real character. It was just catchphrases.
Say the line.
yeah. Say it. I like this match. I thought that Randy Orton should be able to counter a rear naked choke into an RKO. I know that's like a really weird small quibble, but like it just seems to me that a Randy Orton of all people should know how to take a sleeper hold and turn it into a cutter. But I actually really enjoyed the rear naked choke spots. I like that Riddle tenaciously kept going for that. It was a fresh pacing. I like it when matches in this company don't have the WWE blocking. We're
the
like
pattern. Yeah.
Yes. There's like a way that people move and locomote around the ring that reeks of you've only ever moved in a WWE ring. And like the thing that makes Riddle's matches nice is that like he definitely doesn't do that. Riddle doesn't care about osmosing that. He's just trying to have a match inside of those lines, and it makes it feel like more of a match. And that is a consistent hallmark of Riddle's matches that I think is a real virtue of his.
I agree. I get so done because, like, you can watch a Seth Rollins match now and know the beats. Here he's gonna, and it feels like, and this is goes to the Tanahashi criticism of WWE as McDonald's. You're going to get the same thing every time, you know. Here's this thing. Seth does a dive. Falcon Arrow kick out. This, that, the other. You know, it's I get done. This didn't feel patterned. They smacked the crap out of each other, which I dug. I mean, Randy Orton was taking some chest chops. He ain't taken it in a while. And that chest, it ain't been chopped like that in a while. I enjoy, this was a manly, meaty, hose me type of match. And I really
dug
it.
It's a reminder that Randy Orton still has a lot left to give, even at this stage, when he wants to. And we'll have plenty left to give for a while because he doesn't give a lot all the time.
Then Elias beat Kofi Kingston, your former champion.
I mean, this really put Elias on the map, though, right? This was given the appropriate time to really linger and
really
for us
the
to
rub to Jackson. Yeah, really.
I thought Kofi. And the worst part was this, like, a back and forth match. Like, every time Kofi gets stuck in one of these back and forth matches with, like, Scrubzo Magoo and whoever Scrubzo Magoo's buddy is for the week, it's like it just drags Kofi Kingston down one step further. It feels like he was never world champion.
Yeah. Doesn't anyways to me. Need to get away from the New Day branding with him as champion to see what they had.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a problem plaguing Big E now, too, in my opinion. Because Big E doesn't feel hot anymore either. The only other thing I had on Raw about that was, God, again, we're going to go through this a bit, I think, with SmackDown, less so with NXT this week, but the Supernatural stuff. Oh, the Alexa thing. Horror movies are fine tropes to follow, but supernatural things in wrestling are bad. I don't care how well The Undertaker worked. Biker Taker and Reinvented Taker worked better to me, in terms of longevity, once the supernatural stuff died a death, which it had to do, naturally, because fans didn't like it. But, you know, oh, I pushed that bitch and she broke her arm. that and there's no...
This story's just not interesting.
There's no control group.
But
there's,
like,
no thing for which the horror to affect in terms of... You know, there's no camp where the teenagers go to make out and don't watch the kids swimming and stuff, and then all get stabbed to death so you're shocked by it. It's just...
I guess it was supposed to be Nikki Cross, but Nikki Cross is so far in the rearview mirror that, like,
I don't think it's supposed to be her. I'm not sure about that. I thought it was last week, but now I think it's just Alexa in a mask, in a fiend mask.
Yeah, it's just not... I don't know. It just lacks. There's no inspiration behind this. When they are writing this stuff, it seems like they spend a ton of time thinking about the visuals and think not in the slightest why those visuals would need to be there. Like, wouldn't it be cool,
like,
if Alexa
films?
if Alexa came out of a Jack in the Box, wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, I guess. Now, what it actually makes me think of more is it's like Twin Peaks without any of the intrigue.
How about Alexa comes out of a Jack in the Box? You mean box-like structure? Yes. Oh, well, yeah, build it. Well, why would she come out of a Jack? Doesn't matter, pal. It'll look good. You know, that kind of thing.
I'll figure that out. Especially with the rewriting of the show here this week. I'll tell you, whoever wrote this show, you start to wonder if maybe they're having memory issues because they can't seem to remember the matches from last week. Or,
easy. Our friends will get mad.
Well, you told me that someone came in late in the day and decided that they needed
Vince.
To rewrite.
Vince.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Vince.
That
Vince
person.
Yeah,
I'm not getting.
Good.
I'm not getting mad at your friends.
When you said someone,
I'm saying that there's a certain person who's getting old. And to do the reputable journalist thing, commonly among those who get older, memory loss is an issue that is typical among many Americans.
Including the host of this show at times, who can't remember basic names of things he watched this week. Because it doesn't matter. More Supernatural when he run down a little bit of SmackDown.
Dimples Carrillo made an appearance on the show here.
I had forgotten all about that, and I don't care.
Okay.
It's just a shame.
I'm noting that Dimples was on the show.
He's nothing there. And this will serve also as a transition to the other show. The women's division in Raw and SmackDown is a little muddled. I am interested in your thoughts as to are both of these Rhea Ripley / Bianca Belair title reigns going to be long-term things, you think? Or is it the CM Punk, Jeff Hardy, Daniel Bryan, first title, Bayley, even first title runs where it's the toe in the water and they go, well, we did that. And then, you know, you crush their spirits for a while and see how they react to it. And maybe they can reinvent themselves in some way and then get a real title run. Are either of these women on that track? And who? Yeah.
Rhea's okay, the one I think has the issues. I think Bianca, given the fact that we now see the Street Profits being linked visibly, Montez Ford kind of helping advance Bianca's stories along, lets me kind of think Bianca as champion probably a little bit longer term of a thing, because Bianca losing the title is going to be like kind of a beat, a moment. Whereas Rhea, I mean... Look,
is she a babyface or a heel now? That's my question. I'll tell you what.
The thing with Rhea that scares me is it just like we opened the show talking about Mickie James, and it wasn't malice against Mickie James. It was having no real thought about what we're doing with her one way or the other. And I really worry that with Rhea, it's like they called her up because they knew they had to call her up. They're like, well, the right thing to do is to call her up, and they're not wrong. She's not
getting any.
They
needed to do it because of. They needed to do it because of the Charlotte thing.
Yeah.
They had to do it for the Charlotte thing, but they didn't have a reason in story to do it. See? Yeah. Charlotte and Asuka was going to be the match at Mania.
Right. Right. And so.
Charlotte and Lacey before that, probably, or who knows.
So this really does feel like a rudderless ship, and Rhea has been launched a couple of times here at this point. And I want to be clear, yet again, this is through no fault of Rhea's. This is just like this company has no plan, has seemingly had no vision for her. And or the people who have had a vision for her have not been able to successfully pitch that vision to the one person in the company who it matters.
I don't mind tweeners. Rhea hasn't done enough to establish herself as a tweener just yet.
She's not good enough promo to be a tweener.
She was a baby face the first 2 weeks, and then she became a heel when she threw a table at Asuka. And now she's trolling Charlotte, who's an obvious heel, who is... I found the Charlotte part talking to Asuka a little problematic, and I am not that guy who's that sensitive about such things, but the baby voice to an Asian person who can't speak English, bit of a problem.
You had your eyes open.
I thought you were going to say something.
No. I mean, I had my eyes open just because, like, I agree. Like, I was watching that. I was kind of like, holy hell, we're doing the, I'm going to say it. She also did the, I'm going to say it louder to
very
you because
slowly
you're
and very loud.
Very slowly and loudly because you're not foreign. You're also mentally deficient. No, I mean, it was weird and gross. And I don't think it's Ashley Flair's instinct. I think that's what's getting scripted for her. I did not enjoy that. And it goes into a steady issue with Asuka's presentation. I think it's weird that like some weeks they got her doing stuff in English, some weeks they got her doing stuff in Japanese. Like, I don't know, man.
and then the kind of the blocking of this again. Okay, Rhea just beat Asuka. And now she's coming to interfere in Charlotte's match with Asuka, but she's interfering with Charlotte and probably interfering a little bit with Asuka in there. This character is still brand new. She came in and she just knocked and she got a huge debut by winning the title at WrestleMania. Let's get some motivation in there. Let's build why this character is here and why she's important, as opposed to, hey, you saw her lose to Charlotte last year at Mania, and now she's back.
You know what she is? She's the problem we were discussing with the Fiend, only like in a person. She is a look without an actual character or a premise that underpins it. Like Rhea Ripley, she looks like a million bucks, action movie star, rocker, like we got a vibe off of her. And literally no characterization on the main roster. And it's been eons since we had any real characterization of her on the NXT roster. I have no idea what makes this character tick. I don't know why Rhea Ripley wants to be here. She's not even Shotzi Blackheart, where she obnoxiously brings up her dad. But, like, at least there's, like, a reason she was doing that. And it's kind of, like, nice and sweet or whatever. But, like, I can recall character notes about Shotzi. And even Zoe Stark's weird glossed over past. Like, Rhea has nothing. In my head, it's a giant question mark about what is this character's past? What, you know, what is their future? What motivates them? What drives them? Like, what punk bands do they like? What is the point? Why Rhea Ripley? And it's the Fiend Jack in the Box, and Alexa comes out of it, and we don't know why.
What's Shotzi's nickname or thing? It's like
you just I'm my say, dad.
Well, no. It's like the something girl or something like that. I was gonna say, well, whatever you want to say about the tenets of that. At least it's an ethos. At least Shotzi, you know, okay, crazy girl who drives a tank and is going to throw her body all over the place. Kill herself for a match. It's an ethos. It's not a great fleshed out one, but it's an ethos at least.
No, I'll go a little bit further in Shotzi's defense. They've given us enough of a vibe about this character where I can picture Shotzi, a younger Shotzi, working with her dad, building out like a tank and like building out bikes and stuff and like working in a garage and that sort of thing. And now I can picture this Shotzi character, like, welding and, like, making the tank and all of that stuff. I can at least imagine that stuff in my mind. With Rhea, the most I can contrive of her is she's at, like, a grind metal show and mosh pitting.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most
generic.
She's not
generic punk rock. She's not really punk rock. To the concert punk rock.
Right.
You know?
Like, and that's... I mean, I could picture Shotzi Blackheart, Welcome to the Ball Pit, is already that on steroids with more flavor and personality. Like, Rhea Ripley's character has nothing going on in it right now.
And as a transition to SmackDown, I love Aunt Pam. You know I love me some Aunt Pam. I thought that this promo by her was a misstep because of the trope of the sincere promo that they then do the bailout thing. Let me put this to you, Chris. Let me ask you this. Let's say old heel Aunt Pam, still a heel, Bianca gets there after the phone call, which it was very interesting staging. I kind of like that. You go from the, we'll call them the Raw Dogs, but that's not their name. What's their name?
The Dirty Rude. Dogs.
Dirty Dogs, thank you. It was Dolph doing Animal House references and to the Street Profits, back to them. And then Bailey comes in and starts cutting the promo, to Kayla. And then Montez comes back with the phone, being on the phone with his wife, who's on the other side of the arena, which I dug that whole staging. It's like, I'll say it to her face. I'll say what I have to say to her face. Okay, great. And Bianca's on her way here. Bianca gets there. This new champ on a fresh new high. And this heel, Bailey, looks at her, says, congrats, champ. Did a great job. But now you got me, or whatever. You know, that first part of the promo there, that first entire promo, and she just leaves. And that just leaves Bianca doing that. That thing was a perfect reaction to that. What the hell is that? That was a mind screw. But you leave it at that. You don't do the bailout part of the where she comes out of, I didn't mean any of that.
I hated.
That's the part I hated that.
The, the, I,
It's overused is the problem. It was overused by Alexa Bliss a few times.
It's
overused.
What Shane McMahon did.
Sasha.
Shane McMahon did in his build up to Stupid Mania. Yeah, like,
yeah, to stupid. Yes, to fight for the stupid.
Yeah, the fight for the for every stupid American who's ever been stupid or called stupid or who's been called stupid while being stupid. I mean that was that move.
I mean,
I want to apologize to you for calling you stupid. Not
psych. I had my fingers crossed.
Yeah,
Calculating Bailey in this character, taking it to a new level after, let's say, the end of the talk show. Sally Jesse Raphael Bailey was the smack by the Bellas, and she realizes she has to smarten up a bit, and she comes out and she just mind screws Bianca by just saying congrats champ and walking off and leaving her like, I thought we were gonna fight, I thought we were gonna do something. It takes that character to a new evil depth that I think would be awesome.
I mean, she could say something as simple as, you know what? I'm done talking. And then walked off and leaving Bianca with this like big question of like, wait, what does that mean? Like, obviously there's a next beat here. Something's happening. Bailey's not going to do the thing where she's just talking anymore. Like, what are we getting next?
I thought it was a bit of a misfire.
Number options.
I'm here for that match. I am here for that match, though. I think that match is going to be spectacular. But it's probably going to end in like a screw job with Sasha coming down or something to that effect. But
Reggie Bechdel is not dead. Reggie Bechdel. No. Reggie lives in our hearts and on our screens.
For the worst feud in wrestling right now, because Natty and Tamina have no cash. Depending on how you want to say that. I don't see the value in building this feud. We've said we secretly like Tamina as a comedic person. I dig that, but let's build a new team in here, or just finally split up this Nia Shayna team, which I mean we're going towards that. I mean, or my suggestion, and I've written our friends over at the company. It's really time for Slapjack and Nia to get together here.
It is not. It's time for Slapjack to launch Slapjack Subculture, which will be...
Well, the subculture can be him dating Nia and the fun and frivolity of that. They could get matching hockey masks.
That is a different type of subculture. That is a fetishistic subculture, and that's not what Mr. Jack is about.
We could have another shopping montage where they're trying on hockey masks and they're trying to kiss through the hockey mask and they're going to watch hockey, which has hockey masks.
Nia Jax is not particularly good at any of the roles or jobs that she's tasked with, and she should not be lumped in with Slapjack. I'm really excited, though, to see what Slapjack brings to the roster here on SmackDown in a couple weeks. And actually, on a more serious note, Mia Yim coming over to SmackDown does actually have some intrigue for me, because like I feel like Mia Yim's a person that they've had who's capable of turning in good matches, better matches than a lot of the other people they've been tapping on a more regular basis. And it would be nice to have her on the screen having some fresh matches with people.
I did the annotated version, or basically blow-by-blow version of SmackDown on Fightful this week, so I don't want to go too far into it, but I want to mention on two other things. Other than, we had too many distraction finishes this week on SmackDown especially. We had like three of them, I think. It's an overused trope. We got to stop that. But Commander Aziz has debuted the Spike as his finisher. Let's blow the dust off that. That's so old.
Well, they debuted that at WrestleMania.
They're already starting the split. It feels like too, where he's a bad bodyguard for the guy he's protecting, and now we have Sammy and Kevin and Big E.
I love that story. It's a classic story. Are you familiar with AJ Styles and Omos? One of my favorite stories of the last decade.
Have they been on TV lately?
A bit of a black and white sort of old-timey wrestling thing. Fez was on some of those shows.
Fez had a bodyguard, too.
Yeah, Fez had a bodyguard.
Yeah, it just feels, it's too early for that stuff, I think. We still need to establish this character and who he is. Other than the guy who ripped off a guy's junk.
My biggest, this gets back into, it's like looks without, thoughts. The Nigeria thing is really, it's a look. They came up with, Apollo's from Nigeria. Apollo's character is from Nigeria now and heavily leans into that. And then Dabba Kato, they dressed him up like an African generalissimo, and they reverse engineered as best they could some sort of half thought out, tropish, borderline stereotypical story about war torn Africa and renegade groups in war torn Africa.
Yeah. We can't get too deep on that, though. This is WWE.
No, but it's a look, right? This is the thing. I'm not asking them to get into a, thought about colonialism and the interplay with the inner continents and the drawing of the map on continental Africa or anything like that. But I do think it's a recurring problem where, how am I supposed to get into Dabba Kato's new character if there's, nothing to really build out General Aziz with? And when Aziz and Apollo split, who would I want to root for? Would it be Apollo? Would it be Aziz? They work themselves into these weird corners with some of these characters.
Aleister Black has daddy issues. this is Sean O'Hare. His character with a daddy issue. I'm not sure how the dragon is his father a dragon? And if his father is a dragon, is he married to the dragon lady from NXT, who's a 2,000-year-old dragon?
I'll tell you, back when I was in college, I had to do some creative writing classes, and we'd have to read our peers' different works of fiction. And I swear, between the Alexa Bliss story and the Aleister Black story, I was going back to the level of work that I was getting in these creative fiction courses. The 100 level was a good screening of maybe who should never be a writer ever.
Look, my dad took me into the woods sometimes for Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts and conjuring up the Slender Man. And
yeah, right. Bloody Mary's out in the woods. Sasquatch hunting.
I get what they're doing here because it's almost like he has kind of a wink and a nod thing with it, but it's also trying to tiptoe a little bit around the Satanism thing. The animation's fine. It's interesting. They've used that on something else before. Not the same animation, but the animator, I think. I can't remember which one that was. And I thought it was cool then. What do you think of this? Because I'm a wait and see. I hope it's not supernatural.
Best Aleister Black is just when Aleister Black is going out there and beating punks up. He's cool. He's badass looking. He's a former NXT champion, believe it or not, people. And I think the best Aleister Black is just a guy having stiff matches with people. I don't need the dark, ooky, spooky stuff. He's just a cool, badass guy. Have him hang out with Damian Priest.
We're the minority, Chris. Chris, we're the minority on that, though. People like the sports entertainment stuff. So, I mean, let's work within the parameters of what they're giving us.
The Ooky Spook, if the Ooky Spooky was working for the people who like the Ooky Spooky, then they would already be super into Aleister Black. True. And he'd be super over. So, this is a bit of our McDonald's argument from earlier. If it was good, it'd be good.
Is this book going to be a prop for him? Is he a heel and he's going to hit guys with the tails of the bark?
Oh, God. The whatever you get stuck with a book.
The
gimmick,
loaded book.
The loaded book is always a bad gimmick. Always a bad gimmick.
Open the book and you get the Keith Lee flash paper, Fallen Prey. Yeah, that's my fear is that these are going to be the. I think he's game for whatever will get him back in there. And I think people who are working on this are game for it. I just, this is one of those things where you watch and you go, I think there's an interesting idea here, but there's also a lot of bad ideas in here that could go
I just don't think
wrong.
There's a story to tell here. I think this is This is a WWE exposition-y story that you can't build a good story off of. So
yeah,
you
it's
have
the
this,
story
like,
versus feud.
Right. Well,
it's a narrative. Like we were talking about when we were talking about an AEW, it's the narrative versus feud type thing.
Well, this
where
is like,
there's
mean,
no
go,
reason for him to
go back to Alexa Bliss's promo too. Same problem. So she tells this whole story about breaking this girl's arm or whatever. How do I pay off that backstory in WWE world? The only way I could do it that they won't do is by kayfabe breaking somebody's arm. If I was going to tell the story of Alexa breaking somebody's arm and being delighted, the next week I'd have her have a match on WWE television against Scrubs of Magoonie, the girl cousin of Scrubs of Magoo. And Scrubs, she's in the ring and she's like, boop. And then Alexa gets into the ring and Alexa breaks his little Scrubs' arm. And Scrubs is crying and hurting and Alexa's delighting in the pain. But they don't tell that story. And if you don't tell that story, then what's the point of this backstory about, you know, I hurt somebody when I was a child? It's the same thing, Aleister Black, you know, I was hurt when I was a child. There was a book. It doesn't do anything the next week after, and there's nothing to build off of.
Look, Aleister Black is the dragon. Eddie Dennis is the dwagon.
The dwagon.
Fit those two things in. And then to end the main roster, because this is a mea culpa on my part, just because my jaundiced thinking and watching this. The Cesaro Daniel Bryan through line, I originally did not like, because jaundiced wrestling critic Jeff, as opposed to watching the story Jeff, is like, shouldn't this story be more about Cesaro? Aren't we building him up for a match? Why are we having this tag match? Why is Daniel Bryan around this entire time? Why is Daniel Bryan going to there? And then they pulled this thing, the end of the show, with the retirement thing. I go, okay, so this was an entire... I was mad because I was like, okay, so this is an entire bait and switch, this entire show, to get to a Roman Daniel Bryan match. But they made an interesting choice, I think. I think working in Daniel Bryan's leverage, which is what this is, you know, I'd really like to fight these guys. And this, yeah, okay. And then eventually he's going to re-sign because Bree still works for WWE. But using that kind of as a thing, kind of like the Punk contract thing, it's interesting as a loser leave town. Let me put this to you. I like the idea of stipulation where you're done with this brand and you got to leave, but Daniel Bryan could go to Raw. Daniel Bryan could go, the most intriguing choice, I think, and I think he'd have a blast doing it, to NXT.
I think
Daniel Bryan and NXT would be fan-friggin-tastic. I know, you know, let him keep his contract, let him keep his money, whatever, and let him go have some fun with all these guys he used to work in PWG and Ring of Honor with there. And, you know, just, you know, I want to see Walter versus Daniel Bryan. That's a match that interests me. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, Walter, Daniel Bryan, Kyle O'Reilly, and Daniel Bryan actually has a lot of intrigue.
Rerun Adam Cole and Daniel Bryan from back in the day. Hey, I'll take Tommaso Ciampa and Daniel Bryan. That would be a fun match. A little Timothy Thatcher action with Daniel Bryan. I would love Daniel Bryan to go over to NXT UK because I think some of those matches would be quite fun.
Joseph Connors and Daniel Bryan.
How about this Russian kid?
Oh, Ilya Dragunov.
Ilya Dragunov, Daniel Bryan.
I know.
Can I sell you on that? Can I sell you on
Yeah, that'd be great.
Tyler
that'd be a good
Bate
one, too.
And Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Into all those. Joseph Connors and Daniel Bryan.
Let's not push things. We never want to see Daniel. but making him part of the NXT universe where he could also go to other NXT territories, they ever start up India and Japan. You know, that gives him his blood, his wanderlust as well. I find the idea of Daniel Bryan in NXT, and plus especially when crowds come back, that first takeover, having him
He'd be white hot.
Even if it is Karrion Kross that he has to face there.
I think a guarantee move for the first live takeover event is to have Daniel Bryan on there, because you know the house will give you the yes chant that you want. They were going to 100% go with the show and make sure that Daniel is treated like a returning hero. And I like that move. I think we're wish casting a little bit here, but
we
then
are
again,
wish casting the hell out. This is Punk leaving and taking the belt to ROH in New Japan. That's what this is, and it's stupid. But I wanted to do it anyways because that's the interesting choice to me. Is Daniel Bryan can't go back to SmackDown. He goes to another WWE property, but it's not Raw.
Well, he can't
win. I don't want to see him on 205 Live.
I mean, in my head, there's only two ways out of this. Either one, they have Daniel Bryan win via disqualification next week, which I think may be how they get out of it. Or two, like, Daniel loses and he's gone. I kind of think he's losing to clear the way for Cesaro. That Cesaro, like, this will be like the Apollo Crews. Yeah, or like the Apollo Creed.
Or Apollo Creed.
yeah, Apollo Creed gets killed by the Russian. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. One thing I don't want and one thing I do want. If Daniel Bryan loses this match, I don't want it to be because of Cesaro.
Either accidental
or on purpose. I don't want that. Maybe Edge, but I don't want that either. I really don't want this contrived. What I do want, I want them to sell this like hell. I want Roman Reigns to have a goodbye party for him, and I want Daniel Bryan's crestfallen, sobbing ass face on there, just heartbroken. Give me that emotion. Give me the real of it, just a little bit to let me buy in. So that, you know,
Roman having someone wheel out a cake that says thank you, after he beats
you.
Get out. Yeah. Go away. Yeah. Leave. And then all of Daniel Bryan's stuff in a trash bag.
But I loved Roman's promo tonight where it was, you know, you're losers. You're top tier losers. You're main event losers, but you're still lose. Main event loser on a cake. Bring that thing out there.
You lost on a cake. Yeah.
We have this taped message. We have this taped message from your wife. You know, and just go whole hog in it. I have no other notes for SmackDown. It was it was enjoyable in hindsight, but
it's,
at the time,
it's
I just
it's not
went,
Raw. Thank God, it's yes. SmackDown is not Raw.
It's fun.
Raw,
you can find
Raw
fun
stinks.
Things.
Raw stinks. SmackDown is a watchable show.
It's watchable, but there's still concerns like the Big E thing. Big E is ice cold.
His
and I
character
never
sucks.
That.
The ha 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 ha.
He's a jerk.
Yes, it's a
jerk.
It's the thing with the ha 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 thing. I get obviously what's going on there. Here's the issue that seems to be missed is it is at its core inherently disingenuous. Big E is disingenuously laughing even when he's a baby face. Like, and the disingenuity is not endearing. People don't like fake people. It's not fun like that.
People want to root for Big E. And the problem is this entertaining thing over the top thing has made him kind of annoying at times, I think, too, in terms of, and also the, you know, the alpha male, I need to be the alpha male thing. So I need to be tough and just put people down and all that. Yeah.
The disingenuousness ported onto clashing with another baby face makes him heelish and unlikable.
Another kind of tweener babyface.
You have
Kevin Owens.
Who's completely, but Kevin Owens is also pretty earnest. Like,
yes.
He's tweenerish, but like, he's also, he's not fronting. He's just dickish.
Yes. You know what you get with him. He has been very clear about his motives and everything like that. Even
Whereas
if
Big E is fronting. Yeah. Big E is fronting on his emotions. Big E is like, his character is weird and not authentic.
Okay, Cool Kyle, go.
Cool Kyle is not cool. Cool Kyle's theme is not an improvement from his
old
theme.
Let me ask you this. Does his theme, because this is, I wasn't going to interrupt you otherwise, but the theme thing might be something I can't come back to. The beginning of that theme sounds like the beginning of Adam Page's theme, yes?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
okay, continue on Cool Kyle.
The thing with Cool Kyle's theme is especially because what when he was, it's kind of built off of a little bit of his Undisputed Era character when he's tag champions, and you know, there's like lots of swagger. If he's gonna have a guitar solo spot in his entrance, you might want to actually have a good guitar riff as the anchor to that moment when he's doing the guitar solo, not this like little
of course,
crappy.
Of course, your grief is with the guitar lick.
No, it matters. It matters.
This is on brand. This is on brand with you. That's what I'm saying. Go on.
And if you want to get great guitar lessons so that your songs don't have crappy guitar licks, hit me up. I teach via Skype anywhere across the country and internationally available. 20 years of experience. Learn to play like a pro from Chris Novembrino so that your theme song, Kyle, doesn't have crappy guitar licks in it. Probably play it on a synthesizer. Learn how to play a real guitar, not a synthesizer guitar, so you're not, you know, you're playing little crap riffs. Have real guitar. No, it matters though, because he's trying to be cool, and again, he's like leaning into the guitar vibe. But then we have the fact that he dresses up like a dime store Orange Cassidy, and that's not lost to me. A little bit of a cool Kyle is like Orange Cassidy, and then we get into cool Kyle's, the way cool Kyle acts, which is not particularly cool. He's actually kind of a dick, and he's kind of patronizing. He's kind of disingenuous, like Big E Langston, who we were just talking about. And then out comes Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes, who, yeah, he's a heel, but he's like not like he is not a heel that you don't like him. You don't think he's a good guy.
He's a flaky heel.
He's flaky, yeah. And he's kind of funny, and he's kind of got a charm about him. He's bad, but like it's like not without its charm. He's not unredeemable. And he's kind of fun and funny. Like Cameron Grimes is fun, and he's he's not always necessarily aggro against you or like in your face or obnoxious or whatever. Meanwhile, Kyle
like
Leon Ruff. Yeah. Kyle O'Reilly's out here making fun of Cameron Grimes and talking over Cameron Grimes' head. And if he's not interested in what Cameron is selling, don't, whatever. But, like, Cameron is not actually being a jerk at any point. And he's like, I bet on you because I thought you were going to win. You were the underdog. Even if, like, that's supposed to be backhanded, the implication there is, like, Cameron actually thought that, like, Kyle O'Reilly would cover the spread or whatever, you know, hypothetical thing you can get. I don't know. On my bookie, the betting is probably different and probably some of the best betting you can get on the internet, people. Cameron Grimes, I like, he wasn't really being a heel on Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, the promo was rough to begin with because it didn't sound grounded in him. And of course, his voice doesn't have a lot of bass to it either, which doesn't help. The cool Kyle look is
I like it a lot.
The jean jacket, sunglasses, Tommy Bahama fedora is straight L.A. douchebag going to brunch on a Saturday at 1:30 because you're drinking too hard the previous. I am not a fan of it at all. I think you are right. It toes a little bit too close to Orange Cassidy. But here's the thing that I really, the second half of the promo, I was fine with that first half where he's like, well, what title should I go after? And then he mentions the NXT North American title and calls it the workhorse title. That kind of talk should have no play in a wrestling company at all. When the Intercontinental Championship was referred to as the workhorse title, that was behind the scenes. And that was a lineage that just happened with Mr. Perfect and Tito Santana and Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and all those guys. It's not something I want as part of on-screen canon. It's insidery. It's breaking the fourth wall in the bad
way. What does workhorse mean in the world of kayfabe?
Yes, it means nothing. It means nothing because there is no workhorse in kayfabe. There is winners and losers in kayfabe, and that's it. There's no, oh man, but see, in WWE has this problem because they have made work rate kind of, I steal the show at WrestleMania.
We love coming out here and entertaining the fans.
Yes. Yes, they've broken to the fourth wall and used all this meta stuff in there related to the company now that the line is blurred. And I cringed at that line because I need to look up these NXT North American champions. Give me a second here.
Okay,
NXT
so
North American champions.
You had Leon Ruff, one of the great North American champions.
Oh, there's the workhorse title, and we're because like look, Leon. This isn't a bad. This isn't a bad list. Adam Cole, Ricochet, Gargano, Velveteen Dream, Roddy Strong, Keith Lee vacated when they did that great thing with Keith Lee, only to blow it on the main roster later. Damian Priest, Gargano, Ruff, Gargano, who is now a comedy guy, not a workhorse guy. He is a comedy guy in kayfabe. So, well, not in kayfabe, but in story. So
no, he's not treated as a workhorse anymore in like they sort of mentioned a little bit in passing, but like the presentation of Johnny right now is not Johnny Wrestling. It's, you know, even when he's like Johnny Takeover, like he's Johnny Cuckoo Bananas right now is what he is.
He's Papa John. He's Papa John right now.
Yeah.
As they call them. Yeah. So that was my issue with that. And that leads into my only other, well, actually I have 2 points. Cause I want to talk about, I want to end with, Cameron Grimes and Kyle, but also Zoe and Saraya, which I thought was very, very good, but it baffled
me. Yeah.
I want the way away from every title program. They cannot be part of these title programs. They are a fun act. They are unrepentantly stupid, and I love them to death. I love Papa John. I will excuse the creepiness of teenage crush throwing herself at, I'm dying for the scene with Candace and Indy, where Indy throws herself at the boy and the boy rejects her. Mom, I can't believe you. You know, the whole teenage after school special crap I'm here for. I'm here for Austin Theory being a dumb meathead. I'm here for Candace LeRae being dumb stage mom. I'm here for the Papa John stuff in the way. I just don't want the North American title or the women's tag titles anywhere near this stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like the way is perfectly entertaining. It's not a good place to have the title sitting on. It's actually to a certain extent how I feel about like the Elite. You know, like fine act if they didn't have all these belts parked on them. But like when you have all the belts parked on them, I look at it a little bit differently. And like the way having the North American title is not helping the North American title and is not resulting in a better show on NXT from week to week.
Yeah. Gargano's title reigns have not been, recognized for 25 days, but really only 4 days because of NXT tapings the first time. A 2-day title reign the next time because of, it's just really okay. Because of the Leon Ruff stuff. Let's talk about these other two matches. I liked Zoe Stark and Saray. I understand what they're doing with it. You have your hottest on the come star in terms of the women's division that you're building and building and building in Zoe Stark versus someone that she's befriended and come in. But again, Jeff Hawkins' old school thoughts on debuts is, nobody knows this person. I don't want to see a good match right out of the bat. I think there's a misunderstanding of this indie driven audience that they want to see work rate right off the bat, or they're going to reject them like it's a PWG show. I think you can bring in Saray, have her kill somebody. Show us what her finisher is. Show us that she's awesome and a badass. Get the pin and then set up the match for later. I don't want to see her taking this much offense from somebody else in her debut, because that just makes her a good little hand in my estimation, as opposed to a star. And I want to see her be a star on the first time out. This match was fantastic. It did a lot for Zoe Stark. It did a hell of a lot for Zoe Stark, I think, in it. But that wasn't the selling point here. The selling point was it's Saray's debut. And I think there was it. This is what they do. I get that. But it still continues to baffle me every time that it's like, we need the conditioning. We need, what makes Saray special other than the video clips telling me she's special? I want to see her offense. I want to see the style she is. And then I can get a little bit invested in her. You build her up a little. And then you can have the Zoe Stark match in 2 weeks. And I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I liked this match a lot. I thought it was really a really good match. Zoe Stark continues to impress. I thought her chemistry with Saraya was really good. I just have the exact same complaints that you have when we pulled the camera out as to what was the purpose of this match. Why were we doing this match? Who are we showcasing? Was this the right time to even do this match? And like all these questions, they're all like deeply objectionable. Like Zoe Stark does not need to be eating losses. This match, if she lost to Saraya to Takeover, and you had the hug finish, I think it's a perfectly good coming out party for Zoe Stark.
Yes.
But Sarai needed to win. And I think, like, bigger thing too, you need the no-name opponent, because what I want during the first week is I want the long Uber form of their entrance. I want their whole arrival and their way to the ring to be a big thing. And because that takes so long, I want that to go on longer than the match, by the way. That's one of the reasons why we don't have another named competitor. We're spending an inordinate amount of time just focusing on the arrival of this Saraya person to the ring. And then she should get in the ring and, like, maybe lights out that competitor without even necessarily hitting their own finishing move. We just need to see something impressive and stark that puts Saraya immediately into the top of the division conversation. And my concern with the Zoe Stark match is, although it was competitive and arguably good for Zoe Stark despite its weird placement and all the other concerns we've outlined, I would argue that this competitive match against Zoe Stark was ultimately net bad for Saraya, even though she won the match, because this kind of made Saraya feel not upper card. It made her feel more mid card.
Yeah, I want the pageantry, like you said. I want the hard sell here, man. Tell me why I'm buying into this new person. Hard sell on the pageantry, perhaps even to a ridiculous level. I want to see every move that she has. Maybe. Or tease me a bit. Here's the first match. Here's one move that she can kill you with. Boom. Here's the second match. Second move she can kill you with. Oh, now I'm intrigued. She has more than one move that she can kill her. And, you know, move up the chain there. No, I agree wholeheartedly. I really don't have any notes on Cameron Grimes and Kyle O'Reilly, other than it was I really love watching Cameron Grimes do these matches, but I will say something about this show to you. Io Shirai, cat person.
Oh, okay. All right.
Much like you.
Yeah, no.
You saw that, right? Yeah. We have Monet coming in with the dog, and Io Shirai says she's a cat, much like you. So is Io Shirai now your favorite wrestler?
Announcements like that, revelations like that make me have to strongly reconsider where people stand in the pecking order. Gives you momentum. Gives you big mo with Chris.
Well, she doesn't have three cats like you.
I have four.
She's not obsessive about it.
Yeah. They're the four horsemen. I got Arn, I got Tully, I got Rick, and the other one.
Which version?
Sting.
Sting. Oh, that popped me. I was thinking Barry. I was thinking maybe Oli. Maybe Roma, if you wanted to really throw me off there, even with Tully. But no, you know, Sid. Hiro Matsuda, J.J. Dillon. No, you went Sting.
Sting.
Yuffie's
out of the band here soon is what I'm telling you.
The Kyle O'Reilly match was great, I thought, with Cameron Grimes. I see Grimes is a charming heel, and you know the Million Dollar Man thing is gonna be a nice haha spot for member berries. I just, there are times I want him protected, and I don't feel he has been. He's always been butt of joke type thing, and I think his work rate kind of belies how great he is because he does the comedy so well. So
my only knock on this new Cameron Grimes character is it's great for Vince character. It's a bad for Cameron Grimes sort of character where it's like it takes away from the thing that like you and I really liked about this guy. The slimy Southern intensity greasiness thing that he has going.
Well, let's hope Jeff doesn't screw up the audio this week. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can follow the show just at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. And you can now watch us on video. Our reactions to each other, our surprise, us trying to get in and say a word when the other one's rambling, usually me rambling, and then Chris is like, can I talk now? At Voices of Wrestling channel on YouTube. We'd like to thank our sponsors once again, Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping using ROPES and also mybookie.ag. Get up to $1,000 in deposit bonus using code ROPES. That's enough of me talking. Chris, what do you got this week?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I would be remiss if I did not remind you that you can learn how to play the best rock guitar in the whole wide world. You can have a cooler riff than Cool Kyle. You can learn how to play Cool Kyle's theme song. Guitar lessons available by Christopher Brino. Hit me up. ChrisNovembrino@gmail.com, or go and check out my podcast, which is called Don't Worry About the Government. You can message me at DWATG on Twitter. Don'tWorry.tv is our homepage. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and we also have a YouTube channel where there are a bunch of old episodes of Don't Worry About the Government that you can go and check out.
Once again, Unison RIP Bent. To the...
RIP to who?
Shock G of Digital Underground. Sex Packets, $1 or $2.